we've just got a little bit of a glitch at the moment with some of the administration. So I'm just really asking people to enjoy their morning tea. I hope that we kind of get to be ready in time to go into the house today. But please, if you will just bear with us whilst we get the gremlin sorted out. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Again, I said, I don't mean to have a little bit of a girl. Maybe I would. Maybe I would. I don't know what it is. You can move it. But now, my people start off on a gazelle in the
night.
To welcome you all here and to say if we could just have a very quick round of introductions so that everybody knows who's who in the zoo here today. Starting with our members, if we could just quickly introduce ourselves. Thank you.
Hi, good afternoon. It's Roy Bula, member of the committee.
Steven Kalapa, member of the committee.
A member of the portfolio committee. Thanks, Chair.
All right. Now, I think let's have the department. Can you? Who's leading? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable members, my name is Sumisiwe Ngongo, COO, National Department of Human Services.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. My name is Kwezi Ngwenya. I'm from the legal unit of the department.
And I'm William Chiana, from Strategy and Planning of the Department.
Good afternoon. My name is Lodi Kwatemani. I'm from the rental unit of the National Department of Human Settlements.
morning. My name is Cindy Lentuli. I'm also from the National Department of Human Settlements.
Morning. I'm Morris Ngomezulu, and it is in the Department of Human Settlements. Good afternoon. I'm Bongeni Shabango from the Department of Human Settlements. Thank you.
Afternoon. I'm Siegfried Mohani from National Housing Finance Corporation.
Good afternoon. My name is Barisem Makou, Rental Unit in the Department of Human Settlements.
Morning, Chair, Honorable Members. My name is Kolani Kundu. I work for the Department of Human Services.
Morning, everybody. Mili Nekaba, Deputy Director General.
Morning, everybody. This is Togo Sheikh from the Department of Human Services.
Good morning. I'm Nelly Lester from the Housing Development Agency.
Rashida Iso, Housing Development Agency.
Of Yogazin Mabozi, Parliamentary Legal Advisor.
Bongi Welu Funda from the State Law Advisor.
And that went about from PMG.
I'm Sibo Maputi from PCS.
All right. Thank you very much. We have on our agenda today, for those of you who've got that in front of you, we've got consideration and adoption of the HDA regulations. We've got a briefing by the Department of Human Settlements on the Rental Housing Amendment Bill, and we have the consideration of Lanasia and Newtown reports. Now, because of some of the glitches we have, if you don't mind, we will start with the briefing by the Department of Human Settlements on the Rental Housing Amendment Bill. and it would seem to me that this is now coming back. You will remember we did a lot of work on this, and it looks as if it's come back pretty much in the form that it left us, which makes us quite pleased. But we haven't had a chance to go through it very nicely and carefully. So it will be over to the department to lead us with that. And if you could just indicate which documents you are going to be using. I have a document like this. That is correct. All right. So that's the document that we're doing. Have you all got this? It's called the Presentation to the Portfolio Committee on Human Settlements, the 13th of November 2013. And you just raise a hand, particularly the members, if you haven't got a copy. You haven't got. All right? They will leave you. Okay.
Chairperson, while we're waiting, you can just continue.
We can continue. Mm-hmm. All right, they're going to make more.
As long as it's on the screen.
Are we happy like that? Not ideal, but we'll proceed. Thank you, Mr. Kwesi.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks to honorable members. Chairperson, as you have correctly indicated, that this bill, it was introduced during the 2012 parliamentary period, whereby we also made an undertaking, Chairperson, to reintroduce the bill in a form on which it was withdrawn. Chairperson, I'll take quickly through the presentation dealing with what is contained in this bill. It's just to informally refer and also to brief the portfolio committee in respect of what is contained or what, you know, for them to expect, you know, in terms of this proposed amendment. Chairperson, I'll start with the amendment of Section 1. The amendment of Section 1 in terms of the presentation, Chairperson, it provides that the bill proposed to bring the Act in line with the name change of the department from the Department of Housing to the Department of Human Settlement, Chairperson. You know, the same amendment actually was originally in the original, you know, bill as it was introduced. The second part of the amendment, Chairperson, with regard to Section 1 also deals with the bill. The bill provides for the definition of arbitrary eviction, which provides actually for the definition to align the Act with Section 26(3) of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa. Chairperson, the bill goes further actually, you know, to amend Section 3 of the Principal Act, whereby Section 3 of the Principal Act has been amended to fully stipulate the duties of government with regards to rental housing.
Sorry, can I just fold it there? I think it's going to be, there's no point in us just going through words here if we actually haven't got the bill to refer to, the amendment. And that's what they've gone to photocopy. I thought we could proceed, but we cannot proceed without it because we can't see what you are referring to here. So we are going to have to just wait until that copy comes. The HDA thing is being photocopied as well, so we can't proceed with that either. So we really are in a bit of a bad way.
Chair, let me just ask the purpose of this presentation. Is it to update us on the status of the amendment bill or to go into the actual content of the bill? Are we dealing with the bill or are we dealing with the progress? Because as far as we are concerned, the bill was withdrawn. So it's back to square one now. So the department needs to tell us what happened between when it was withdrawn up to now. Not that we are discussing the content. We are not dealing with the bill currently. We are dealing with the progress.
Correct.
Report. So I don't think that we would need to look at the act or, you know, it clause by clause because of that is what we still have to do. I would presume that the department is saying they are bringing the bill back into life.
Yes.
That's what they are saying to us. So today we are not dealing with the bill content per se.
No. But I would think that we would be far more responsible if we actually had the amendments in front of us, you know, in the form of the bill. But you're absolutely correct. My understanding is, what form has the bill taken now to bring it back? Is it back in its original form, or is it back in the form that we completed the work on? I think that's important for one point.
Mm.
And that's my understanding, that it's come back in that form. But I feel very uncomfortable, whilst we're not going to deal with the whole bill, I feel very uncomfortable if we are just referring to something here and we say, hey, wait a minute, is it all there? If there have been no changes to what we submitted, then I can concede. But if there have been changes to what our final submission was, then we've got a problem. So perhaps, Squizzy, you could just lead us on that.
Yeah, but still, we still are going to deal with the bill in detail. Today, we are not dealing with the bill in detail. The department is just saying to us, we are reviving the process. So we don't have to look at the clause. I understand your concern as far as looking at it clause by clause, but we're still going to do that. We are not doing that, and we're not going to vote on it today. It's just a progress report.
No. All right. Honorable Buller?
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. And I think in addition to what Honorable Steve had mentioned, that the bill has been withdrawn, can it be clarified as to whether it will have to go for tagging again as well?
Yes. All right. I think, Quizzy, if you could just clarify the point about what form this is coming back in, whether it's the completed form or some other form, and also whether it's, the tagging has been dealt with. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. The I'll confirm two issues. The bill, you know, we are reintroducing it in its original form, and secondly, like the Honorable, you know, Halapa has indicated, the bill is still yet to be formally referred, you know, to the Speaker and also to the Council to be formally introduced so that it can properly be tagged and be referred, you know, to the members. But as it stands to date, it's a briefing by the department just to inform the members, you know, by way of presentation to say that the bill is on its way, you know, to be formally introduced. So the bill has not yet been formally introduced. Therefore, after it has been formally introduced, it will be referred, you know, formally by the Speaker to the committee. It's when you'll be expected to deal with it clause by clause in order for it to deal with it in a formal way so that the process of the joint taking mechanism will also, of course, ensue, you know, in order to ensure that the proper referral actually is made. But as it stands now, we are intending to brief the, you know, the committee, just to prepare the committee to say that this is the bill that will be formally coming before you. Then this is expectation we are tabling in its original form. Once it's referred actually to the committee, you know, formally by the Speaker, so that you are informed about the bill, what is there that is contained on it.
Can I just be clear? When you say in its original form, is that the form before we started the work on it? Okay, all right.
Okay, here we go.
Are we clear, members, that actually what is coming before us now is the bill in its original form before we did the work on it?
Back to square one.
Just back to square
one. So I think then we don't have to go, surely don't have to go through the clauses, because I think that's what confused it. To say this will be the section that we are looking at. Just give us the process of where it is now and what we will be expected to do moving forward. And that's it. Then it seals the whole thing.
Okay, thank you, Chrissy.
Can I clarify something?
Yes.
The bid was withdrawn by the minister, as we all know. What happened this year, the department brought it back. It came to our office for scrutiny, and we have to certify it and bring it to Parliament for introduction. So the bill that came to us for scrutiny is the same. It was the same version of bill that was withdrawn by the minister, the one that was already debated by the committee. So that was the version that was referred to us, and we scrutinize it. The bill that is going to come to you after we have certified is going to be the same, except for one clause that has been deleted, because we had constitutional concerns regarding that. And it was the very same clause that the department had concerns with in terms of implementation that resulted in the withdrawal of the bill. So that's the only clause that we have omitted from the bill. Everything else. Thank you.
All right, then perhaps you can tell us which clause it is that's been omitted. I think that might help us. Because what you're saying, I'm hearing now, I'm confused, I must say. Because you're saying the bill's coming in its original form before we did the work on it.
When I refer to the original form, I refer to the original form as the way as the committee actually has worked on it, as it was withdrawn, you know, by us from Parliament.
Yes.
Yes, that is the original form.
Okay, now I'm clear. So it's coming in the form that we did all the work on, and what legal is saying is that they've seen it, and the only difference is the one clause that they're not happy with that has been withdrawn. And that, I think, is perhaps if we could have clarity from Kwesi on that. Does that make sense to the members? I'm particularly concerned about the members. So it's in the form that we debated and worked on, and that is what has been submitted, and now legal has withdrawn one amendment that we made. All right, Kwesi.
Thank you, Chairperson. What I will do, Chairperson, in the instance that to give the broad overall in terms of what the committee should have, you know, will expect once the bill is introduced, and thereafter we'll go to that particular clause that you are referring to.
Okay.
But I think it's important that they can, you know, to give us a broad overview in terms of what the committee will expect
as we
deal with this particular bill. Chairperson, like I've indicated, to say that the broad overview of the bill will basically have to deal, you know, with some of the elements to amendment to Section 1, like I've already alluded to. It will also deal with amendment to Section 3, which has been amended to fully stipulate the duties of government with regards to rental housing. It will also deal with amendment of Section 4 and 5 of the Principal Act, which basically Section 4 of the Act has been amended to clarify, you know, to demarcate the rights of the obligations of the tenant and the landlord, that both parties understand their rights and obligations in terms of the Act. As you can recall, Chairperson, that was the issue that was raised by the committee, that we need to spell out very clearly in terms of various obligations, in terms of the rights of the tenant and the rights of the landlord,
yes,
in terms of the Act. Then Section 5 of the Act also, Chairperson, has been amended and provides for all these agreements entered into between the tenant and the landlord to be in writing. And also further, Chairperson, the bill further provides for the standard provision that should be contained in the lease, what provisions should be contained in the lease, and it should also have a lease, you know, standard lease contract. The bill also, Chairperson, that should be introduced, amend Section 6 and 7 of the Act, which Section 6 of the Act has been amended to qualify the application of Chapter 4 and to render the application thereof mandatory to all provinces. Section 7 of the Act has been amended to amplify the provision of the establishment of the Rental Housing Tribunal and to render the establishment of the Rental Housing Tribunal in every province mandatory, Chairperson. Remember, there are particular provisions of pertaining to say that, you know, we still have some other provinces without a rental tribunal, so we're trying, let me say, you know, to compel them to do so. So amendment of Section 9 and 10, Chairperson, basically deal with that the Act has been amended to increase the, you know, to increase the composition of the members of the tribunal to 7 as to ensure that the tribunal is able to function as two committees with 3 members in each committee. Section 10 of the Act has been amended, Chairperson, to empower the tribunal to arrange and to hold 2 separate but simultaneous meetings for purposes of effective functioning. Section 13 and 14 of the Act also has been amended, Chairperson. Section 13 precisely has been amended to extend the powers of the Rental Housing Tribunal to rescind any of its rulings. Section 14 in particular has been amended to make the establishment of the rental housing in every local authority mandatory, Chairperson. The other amendment also pertinent to this Act was the amendment of Section 15, which has been amended to empower the Minister to make regulations after consultation with the relevant parliamentary, you know, with the relevant parliamentary committee and the MEC. Chairperson, also Section 16 of the Act has been amended to enhance the penalty and also to include, you know, the provisions, the offences and provisions. The amendment of Section 4 and 5, Chairperson, has been amended by removing Section 15 from Chapter 4 and inserting it under Chapter 5 of the Act to be in line with the legislation draft in practice. And also there was also a new insertion, Chairperson, which of Section 17A of the Principal Act has been amended by the insertion of the new Section 17A, providing for an appeal process against decisions of the tribunal. And also, Chairperson, the procedures for lodging an appeal will be prescribed by the Minister by way of regulations. And also the freedom of expressions, you know, Chairperson, the Principal Act has been amended by the substitution of the expression local authority wherever it appears in the Act with the expression of local municipality to align the Act with the Local Government Municipal Systems Act, Act No. 32 of 2000, Chairperson. And that is, in a nutshell, Chairperson, what is expected in terms of the rental housing amendment bill that is going to still have to be introduced. And Chairperson, the issue that relates to that was raised basically by the state law advisors in respect of the provision that was previously, you know, proposed, you know, by the committee was specifically in relation to the obligation, you know, of the national government in terms of dealing with certain obligation of supporting and also funding certain housing programs or rental housing programs. Basically, those are some of the issues that, you know, it was, of course, I failed to say that, you know, to a limited extent, you know, those obligations that has been vested, you know, in the national department will, of course, actually, you know, pose,
you know, some of the constitutional challenge. But however, those are the issues that precisely that were, of course, only that particular provision that relates, you know, to the mandate that was expected, you know, to be done, you know, by the National Department as far as, you know, its obligation in terms of, you know, supporting and providing, you know, for, you know, for the funding and to support the rental housing programs, you know, in various provinces. Those are some of the other elements that, you know, the civil advisor felt to say that it needed, you know, to be reconsidered and also to be brought before the attention of the committee so that we can, of course, investigate, you know, its element, you know, of the constitutionality. But however, also, you know, I'll go and give you, you know, to add on that as well.
Thank you, Chapasa. The clause, I'm having a difficulty because you don't have the provisions,
exactly.
The bill in front of you so that you can also look at it. It was in the bill which was debated here by this committee. It's a clause that amends Section 2 of the Act. Section 2 deals with responsibility of government to promote rental housing. The amendment proposed by the committee on this section was the addition of subsection 5 and subsection 6 to this section, to Section 2. The proposed amendments, they were going further to bring additional measures for the minister to enhance the rental housing property. I'm going to read the provisions. The issues that we had in the office is the issue of uncertainty. It was unclear how the minister was going to implement those provisions, because when you put something in law, the person that is going to implement it, it must be clear, it must be able to exercise the obligations imposed on him. So we had questions on this during the deliberations in the committee, but there was not much opportunity that we got here, you know, when we did raise that during the deliberations. So when it came back to us, we couldn't just rubber stamp it to say it was already before the committee. We had to also scrutinize it afresh and comment on its constitutionality. The concern was the impractical. It was impossible. We asked the questions, how the minister is going to implement it, because our role is to ensure that the legislation is clear. So the concern was relating to that. We raised it to the department to check it, to consider it, and then if they are clear that the minister will be able to implement, then it's fine. We raised those concerns. So we got instructions back from the department to say, yes, this is a problem from their side, and they will deal with it, because in terms of Section 2, the minister must develop a policy framework on rental housing. So they say this matter will be dealt with in that policy internally. So the instruction we got was to remove then that clause, the relevant clause. I'm unable to read it because you don't have the copy in front of you, so that I can take you through and see the uncertainty that I'm talking about.
I think they're just sitting handing it up now. I haven't got a copy here.
Amendment of Section 2, from page 4 of the bill.
Okay.
Yes,
everybody got it? Page 4 and Section 2. Right.
Yes, the first one, paragraph A, is to add paragraph E in the Act. Subsection 2 is got A, B, C, D.
Right.
So the amendment was the new...
Wait a minute, we're not with you. Page 4.
Amendment of Section 3 of Act 50 of 1999, and then it's got it's a clause 2, and then it's got subsection 5 and 6. In brackets.
Yeah.
Is it the one?
Yeah, the version that you're having is the one that will be introduced in Parliament without these clauses. Remember we said we recommended that it should be removed because of our concern. So it won't have this clause.
All right, but what we have here is what is coming back to Parliament.
Yes.
Honourable Member Sitoli?
Chairperson, I think we are more confused. It is not proper to put this thing aside and then we have a date that we will deal with the sections because it will give us more confusion than before.
Yes. I think, members, what has happened is that we have now been given the amendment, the version which is being submitted to Parliament. What the legal is saying is that taken out what was in the original form and we only have the amended one as it's being submitted into Parliament. So what she's referring to, she's trying to explain what has been removed. But I grant you, it's very difficult to know when she's talking about one thing and we are sitting here with another thing. We are going to bring this back, but I think it is important just to understand some of this background so that we don't go over this all again when we come back and it looks as if I don't know when the chairperson is going to fit this in, but we're in her hands. But let's just work through it now. Let's hear what Bondi's referring to now is the original that we removed from the document, and we only have now the new one in front of us. Yes.
Now that we haven't got the original one, now what's going to happen? She's going to refer to the original one. Whereas we haven't got the original one, we have got the new one now.
I think would it be in order for Bondi to say that she's referring to the old copy so that we are clear.
To the old copy. We don't have the old copy.
No.
I think that the process was Shezi and Bongi just tell us we are bringing this bill back to Parliament.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's it.
Yes.
Let it end there.
Yes.
Then, after they've submitted it formally to Parliament, they will bring the old and the new together, and then we start to
internalize.
Let's not deal with semantics.
Yes, okay. I'm happy with that. I think as long as we understand what it is we're dealing with, we've got a new amendment that is before us. You can take it home now because this is what is going to be submitted as the amendment bill. And then when we come back, at whichever meeting that's going to be, we will start from this source here. This is the amendment that's being submitted. And then we will have alongside of that the original that Bongi is referring to. Now, my understanding is the bill was withdrawn on the premise of this clause that Bongi is referring to now, that they feel regarding the funding and National taking too much responsibility for that. Is that right, Kwesi? Yeah. All right. Now, you can take it up again. Bongi or Kwesi? Do you want to still continue? I think... All right, Kwesi.
Thank you, Chairperson. On that note, then we'll like you have indicated, we'll of course actually once the bill has been formally referred to the committee, we'll bring all those copies, including the original copy, so that the members can easily make reference actually to the original one and which clauses that has been inserted, which ones that are still in the bill. So once that is done, Chairperson, I think that that will be more appropriate for us, you know, to provide all the necessary information, necessary copies before the committee. And once it can be introduced, then we'll of course provide more clarity in respect of this process. Thanks.
Okay. All right. Are there any other questions from the members regarding this? All right, we put this one to bed then until it's brought back to us with all the proper documentation. All right, thank you very much, Mary. Are we ready now with the HDA regulations?
I gave them to her.
Good.
Okay.
All right, members, you're being handed a document now regarding the Housing Development Agency. Housing Development Agency regulations, a document that looks like that.
Mm.
We got that. We've now been handed also a document called a Government Notice Housing Development Agency Act, and it's got this little grey streak down the side. Got that? All right. And then I'm not too sure what's so different about this one. It looks like exactly the same. No consultation with the municipalities.
Not the PhD.
And I think that is serious.
The government regulation.
So I'm going to ask who from the department is meeting us here. Mr. Gianni.
As we will do the introduction from the HDA, then they will go through the regulations.
And I think, please, because of the confusion that there is reigning here this morning, indicate which document you are using when you start referring to anything.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think there are two sets of documents. You can recall, Chairperson, that when the first committee deliberated on the regulations, you know, there were various comments that were raised and issues that were raised by the Portfolio Committee after the presentation by the Parliamentary Legal Advisor. We were therefore requested to say that we need to go back and provide, you know, new insertions and clarities pertaining to those
aspects of the regulation that the committee have raised. I think the committee raised, a couple of issues, in respect of the draft as it was presented before them. So what we're going to do now, Chairperson, is only to, point out and to make reference to the committee to say that in respect of Section 1 or in respect of Clause 1 or Regulation 1, the committee raised, the issue pertaining to Clause 1, and that's how it was raised by the committee. And in terms of the new insertion as it stands, this is how we have inserted it into the draft. I think that is the direction that we're going to provide, Chairperson, if you're in agreement therewith. Because previously it was shown to say this is in clause, let's say for example in clause 3, sub-regulation 1, the committee raised the issue pertaining to a particular issue. Then we'll of course provide to say this is how we have inserted the particular concern of the committee. Then we'll go to the next clause that, and provide, clarity in terms of the issue that was raised by the committee.
I think there's a bigger issue at stake here, and that is that we are now faced with, the last time we met, memory serves me correctly, we raised, there were certain things that you were going away and you were going to go and work on, but now this morning we actually have a document from SALGA. And this is the thing that worries me the most, because they've raised concerns here which seem to me, and we haven't had as members, I must really say these documents are coming too late for us. We haven't had a chance to really have a look at this document. And I've had a quick look through here, and it would seem to me that there's even consultation with the municipalities. It hasn't gone there for them to make comment on what we have here. So it would seem to me that that is the bigger issue we need to deal with first, instead of what we've already worked on, because now it seems as if we've almost gone back. Instead of having had the consultation with the municipalities in the beginning, now we seem to be having it, and now they're making their recommendations. So let me just have an opportunity to hear the members, and then, because I think this is what we need to be dealing with first, because this could make another substantial difference to the regulations that are in front of us. Honourable Steve?
Yes, Chair, I agree with you wholeheartedly on that one. We've got a serious challenge. Well, when you look at that SALGA document, it's raising a lot of eyebrows. And if this is going to fly, we've got to get it right. Because remember, every time we've been talking about the IGR, and the way SALGA is putting their inputs and comments, even themselves are still going to consult. So we've got a challenge there. We've got a challenge. They are raising quite very pertinent issues in terms of the IDP, in terms of the funding, and in terms of the implementing agent. And consultation needs to happen in that front. So I agree with you when you say we've got a bigger animal here, which is local government. And I think this is what the HDA, together with the department now, should engage themselves upon. Because of, I don't think that we can move forward without doing, because of in their letter, in their submission, they are talking about the consultation process. They are saying that the HDA presented the draft policy and regulations to MINMEC on 9 May 2013, at which point the resolution was taken that members should apply their minds to the presentation and provide input to the CEO. The final document should be presented at the next meeting of MINMEC for approval. However, the item has not yet been taken back to MINMEC. So there is still another challenge there. On its own. And SALGA is saying they are still going to consult their local authorities. They have already given the municipal mayors and the municipal managers, because of they require their input there. So we've got a challenge there as far as local government is concerned.
It seems to me it's the other way around now. If you want to study this one, we with the first one now. Let us start with the first one and take the second one. We can't just jump up now and finish up without doing the first one. The consultation, the saga, and everything, so that we are all clear, so that we can love here. It's a proposal, actually. If we can start with the first one and come up with the second one, the third one, so that we can have our lives.
When you say the first one?
Conservation with Saga and then they are young.
Yes. I don't think that we can proceed at the moment. I think it's terribly disappointing because, you know, this has been limping along now for a long time. When did this first come before us? In about May this year? When we first originally, and I think we sent you away on the first meeting. How come we've slipped up on actually getting this response from Salga, who are critically important as local government in a piece of legislation that affects them, you know, like this? Can we have some explanation about that? Why has this come in so late?
Thank you, Chairperson. The consultation with SAGAIT has been ongoing, Chairperson, from the policy developmental phase. You can recall, Chairperson, that even when we introduced this particular piece, we had a continuous consultation with them. But however, they have also requested, even at the policy level, to say they will, of course, need further consultation. They needed also to engage. We have been engaging with them in an informal way in terms of ensuring to say that there is a proper consultation with them. The consultation has been ongoing, Chairperson. But however, in here, what they are raising is that they cannot just be giving that informal consultation process, but the formal consultation needs to ensue to ensure to say that there is a formal submission that is done, you know, by SAGA, signed by the chairperson of SAGA, to say that this is the outcome of the consultation process. This will be their own formal submission. But however, chairperson, I must attest to the fact to say that during the developmental phase and during the policy developmental phase, we have been in consultation with them. Of course, we have not been in agreement with certain issues, you know, that they are raising, but of course, you know, given the fact to say that it's a piece of regulation that directly affects them, we need, you know, to ensure to say that we need to have that common understanding and we should be in agreement, because in any event, you know, this is a piece of legislation that affects them directly. But that consultation, Chairperson, will try, let me say, you know, to speed up and to ensure that, you know, we move forward actually with speed, because they have already indicated to say that, you know, towards the end of this month, you know, towards the 1st of December, they will of course consolidate it and come back and sit and also to ensure to say that what issues actually, you know, we need actually, you know, to be, you know, reaching out to each other on, and what issues, you know, on what issues that will of course have a common understanding, you know, on. But as we stand, Chairperson, we will of course try our utmost best to speed up actually this process to, you know, to have a clear and a common understanding and have an amicable, you know, solution with SALGA in terms of certain provisions that they are feeling very strongly on.
Am I to understand from what you've just said that the concerns that they have raised are not necessarily a problem to you?
Not necessarily that a problem, but that's something that it's a question of either interpretational issues in terms of its application. What they are raising is that certain provisions that they are proposing, they will have actually, you know, implementation challenges on their side. But that's something that it will be quite be important and prudent for them to go back to the municipalities and to solicit them so that their correct views in writing to ensure to say that actually once they commit, you know, to agree or to disagree with a particular provision, then that should be on record. But as I'm saying, that those are some of the other issues, Chairperson, in terms of the intergovernmental relation that we'll try, you know, to resolve and to have an amicable solution.
All right. So what needs to happen now is they are going to the municipalities. They need to get recommendations from the municipalities, and only then can they consolidate their report and then bring that back to you. Now, how long is that going to take?
Chairperson, the indication will be that during the end of this month, they will conclude with the consultation process. They will have the written consultation, and the first week of December, they will of course submit, you know, to us as a department, a signed, you know, comments and a formal submission signed by the chairperson of SAGA in terms of all the issues. And therefore, Chairperson, once we receive them, I think it will also be appropriate for us, you know, to share,
you know, with this committee, let me say on time, once we received the formal submission from SAGA signed by the chairperson of SAGA, and also will provide clarity in terms of which issues that we're not in agreement with or which issues that actually, you know, are still in contest.
So, Chairperson, in light of what Shezi has said, then it would be proper for us to give them that space based on the time frame, on the set time frame, to go and negotiate with SAGA and get their comments. And by the time they come here, they've got a consolidated report and consensus that we can move forward. Because if we proceed, it's going to mean that consultation will bring in new issues that needs to be dealt with. So we got to give them strict time frame of when do we expect the consultation to have happened. Then from there, when they bring to us, they bring us with one voice.
Honorable Duncan.
Chairperson, yes, thank you very much. I know that the HDA officials are here. I would like them to comment on how far we are now. And then also maybe just tell us from the HDA side, how do they feel about the concerns raised by SAGA? And maybe they further away within the process, we don't know. But since they are here, maybe they can comment on that.
Okay. Certainly, we will now want to be putting a time frame on this because we can't wander around forever, Kweli. So just give that some thought. Let's just hear first from HDA. Perhaps, all right, you're going to take it. You know, what your comments are regarding this now late submission from SAGA, which seems to have some pretty pertinent concerns that they're raising.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Members of Parliament. With regards to consultation with SAGA, we have been in consultation with them. We have made a presentation to the National Working Group. It was from the National Working Group where they recommended that they needed time to consult with their provincial structures. To date, we've made presentation to the Eastern Cape. There are dates that have been provided for Western Cape, Northwest, Mpumalanga, and Gauteng. We're in Gauteng on Friday, the 13th. The view that is being expressed from SAGA is that they would like to have the centrality of the municipality expressed quite strongly in the regulation. Their concern is that it's their local municipal space, and therefore if the regulations don't speak to their responsibilities there, then they will have a problem. That we have noted and is being reviewed in the regulations as they stand. One of the other stronger comments that they had was whether it was up to the minister to declare a priority housing development area. The state legal advice that we've received to date suggests that the HDA Act doesn't quite give the minister that much authority to declare. The agency can declare, but the minister would gazette on behalf of the agency. So that's to be in keeping with what is provided for in the Housing Development Agencies Act. It says the agency may declare a priority housing development area. It doesn't say the minister will. And that was one of the concerns that SAGA had. The other concern that they had was around the financial implications of the priority housing development area. And I think, members, you also indicated at our last meeting that the financial chapter needs to be boosted. The municipalities were concerned that this is going to be another unfunded mandate. And to that end, the way that we structure the funding chapter should be able to express contributions from the department, the organs of state, and obviously the contributions from the local authorities themselves. So again, they wanted to have that explicitly provided for in the regulations as to what is the funding structure, not that they are left to be the only ones who are funding the priority housing development. The principle of the priority housing development areas speaks to integration. So how do we coordinate all our funding initiatives? And if that is not coming through for SAGA, we need to make sure that they understand that it's part of the coordination integration of funds. It's not that there's going to be a special fund which now comes along for priority housing development area. And that aspect ought to be looked at in the regulation. The other area that they had was around consultation. Is SALGA going to be part of the consultation, or are they simply going to be provided with a PHDA to approve? We've looked at the Municipal Systems Act and their provisions in the Municipal Systems Act as to how consultation must happen. And that component has to be emphasized in the regulations as well. They don't want two parallel processes. They're recommending to us that this should be part and parcel of the IDP review and approval process. So they have one process as opposed to PHDA process and IDP process. And so to that end, the PHDA consultation should be in the same timeline as the IDP review process, so that when they approve an IDP, if they have prioritized a PHDA area, then that becomes one of their priorities. It's almost like saying, this is our priority project that we're committing to. Once they submit that IDP budget for approval, whatever commitments they're making will then be reflected in that component. And we as HDA support that view because we also are not keen to have two parallel processes. The development plan has to be prepared by HDA in collaboration with the municipality. Our desire is that the municipality says, we want to be a PHDA area, and we will work with the HDA to formulate the plan for which we'll submit to the minister to get MINMEC and other departments support to help facilitate the coordination of funding and the implementation of that priority area. So that will be our first prize to get the municipalities on board.
Right, thank you. I think that gives a lot of clarity. I'm going to ask, and it seems to me that we actually have got a lot of work still to do here, because what you've just told us now is that you've only consulted so far with the Eastern Cape, and the others are still, you know, the 13th is the next one. That's quite far down the line. So, you know, that's only two. You've got still now to go. Are you conducting your process separately to SALGA, or are you doing this together? Because now, are we waiting for SALGA to do consultation and HDA are doing, you know, consultation as well?
Chair, we are doing the consultation with SALGA. We are coordinating the dates with them. What we are doing is using the existing sitting structures. So when their provincial working groups are sitting, those are the dates where HDA is being placed on the agenda, and we are consulting with them on the regulations. So we are pretty much in their hands in terms of when the provincial structured meetings are happening, and we are availing ourselves for those meetings to be able to get their input. We did have a formal meeting with them at the department, and it is at that meeting where their technical representation committed to us that by end of November, they would have completed the provincial structures. By the first week of December, we should have a SALGA-signed comment, a formal comment, because what we have presently is an informal comment. Just to make that clear to the members, what we have is an informal comment based on the technical SALGA team who have reviewed the issues. They've sent a circular to their chapters saying, we've been made aware of this PHDA, these are the issues that we're concerned about. What is your view about it? So once the provincial chapters have consulted, the chair of SALGA would now give us a formal comment on what SALGA and SALGA structures have in mind.
But that's falling way behind now.
Yeah.
All right, what I'm going to, Honourable Duncan?
I just want to ask a question. How long is this process of putting the regulations forward? When did you start until today? What is the starting date for putting the regulations, trying to put the regulations in place? I'd just like to know that period. Did they start last year or when? And then I will follow up. Okay. Crazy.
Chairperson, the process of putting the regulations, they were introduced during the course of May this year.
Yes, it was a bit of a disaster meeting.
Chairperson, yes. If it started in May this year, then maybe I, and also since the fact that the HDA is busy reviewing actually the regulations based on the concerns of SAUDA. And since they started in May, I just think that enough time needs to be given to make sure that the IGR consultation is taking place. We have 283 municipalities, that is inclusive of the metros and everything, and then 9 provinces. We cannot consult only with, I understand that SAUDA is the overarching body for all the municipalities, but then again, we must satisfy ourselves that when SAUDA gives a report that it is done in consultation with all the municipalities, that it is in consultation, and then of course the 9 provinces. So I think that we all in favor of regulations, but I think that the consultative process must not be rushed. It must not be rushed. And that we put a proper regulations in place. And then also besides the work that the HDA is going to do, based on the concerns raised by SAUDA, I think that the department, as far as I'm concerned, should have had their part, the department's part of how they, their comments was supposed to be folded in the regulations, and maybe they must also try and come forth of how they will respond to the regulations. Thank you, Chair.
All right, thank you. I'm going to suggest the following as a way forward. And that is that, Kwesi, I think we need a proper plan from SAUDA as to their consultative process so that, you know, we've got something that we can work on. And I think that would also help HDA because they are waiting for SAUDA to take a lead here, as I'm understanding it. And then I think that if we give you, and I'm in full agreement, I think we don't want to rush the thing and then be here with poorly processed regulations. We want something that's going to work. So would it be reasonable to say that by the time we get back onto the recess, because there is going to be some holiday time in between, and that perhaps by the third week in January, would that give you enough time? And I want you to be realistic now, so that we don't push you, the third week in January and then you're not ready. And I think when your report comes, if HDA could put their own comments with the process so that we also can have that to look at before we get into the meeting, and then we don't have to waste our time, with a whole lot of stuff that we haven't had a chance to look at. Does that sound reasonable? Third week January, it means, Kwesi, that you're going to have to keep a very tight rope with SAUDA. You're going to have to go to them. They must give you their dates that they are doing all of this, and then it helps the HDA as well.
Chair, I'm in support of the proposal. It's just that on the time frame, we got to be realistic. Shouldn't we say maybe the first quarter of next year? Because remember, the initiative also comes from SAUDA as well. So it's not only in the hands of HDA, but it's also in the hands of the other stakeholders that they must engage. So if we say to them, perhaps by the first term next year, they should have brought something, because of it's for them to engage with those stakeholders and then come up with a consolidated, compromised report and then come back to us on it. So I think it will be reasonable to say the first term.
Are you agreed with that? Or, don't mind extending. This thing of going on and on and on with stuff. The end of January, surely by the end of January. We actually in your hands. Please help us here. Because we could say next week we want everything, but, that's not realistic. And I think we want sooner rather than later. CEO?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think if we have to take into account the holidays that we are running into now, maybe we can agree that by the end of,
of March, which is our end of the our financial year, because it's also in the best interest of the department and of the portfolio committee that this process should have been followed, been completed by them.
Yes, I think, you know, this term of parliament is coming to an end. And at the moment, the way we stand, I think the 13th of March is our farewell, big farewell day. you take it down to the end of March. I would like to see us as a committee completing this process. And that means that, you know, it does need to be brought forward, because you don't forget, when it comes to this committee, it then will go back and forwards a bit as well still. So, you know, I think we need to try to speed up a bit.
Chairperson, if the committee agrees, can we work up until the end of February so that we also accommodate the end of the term of the portfolio committee, if we say end of February?
Members, how do you feel about that? Does that sound reasonable? Okay, so then please, that's the homework. You've got to go, and please don't go having holidays now as soon as you get back. Just take the holiday you're entitled to. And then come back, please. And then HDA, if they can also, please, we want your comments in writing for, you know, what you favour that is being regarded. And Kwesi, you sit on Saga, please, to get a proper programme. You're sitting on there. Okay. All right. Can we put that one to bed, members? It is now 1:15. The House meets at 2 o'clock. We've got one more item on the agenda. And that is consideration of the Lanasia and Newtown report. And again, these documents were all handed out here this morning, so I'm afraid it's very difficult for us to follow stuff that we get on our desk. So, who's going to take this?
Can I just introduce it?
And then, yes, and then if you could indicate the documents that you're going to be using, because they're all here.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, members. First of all, I would like to apologize for not being able to attend in the last session. I was made aware that members were not pleased with the delegation at that meeting. My apology. I had to attend another meeting elsewhere. Please, as it may, we share Chairperson to fulfill the mandate that was asked for us. There's two documents. The one is on the Lanasia one. In the last meeting, it was discussed orally. Today we're tabling the document. Morgan is going to take you through the documents and there are annexures to the document. And once it's done with that one, then we'll deal with the new term. So I will allow, Chairperson allows, I'll give over to Morgan to take us through the presentation.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair members. Good afternoon. I'm still dealing with the IT issues. I'm trying to open the document. The mouse is...
He's going to indicate which document he's trying to find it.
Members, I'm still struggling with actually the IT. There's two documents, basically. There's the one that is titled Progress Report to the Portfolio Committee,
yes,
with the logo of the department, and then we have a project plan. You know, I think the document secretary members are in black and white. The project plan provides detailed progress, you know, from the time we started to date. So I'm still trying to deal with IT issues I'm struggling.
All right, the project plan, members, looks like this. That's the progress report, that's the one, and then the project plan looks like that. So you've got two documents. This is Gauteng province. Thank you, Chair. We're very happy to see you back. We're struggling along here. Okay, you've got both documents, members. One says progress report, and this one says Gauteng province, the Lanavia project plan. Okay, right, Bumi, are you ready now?
Yes, I'm ready. Thanks, Chair, thanks, members. The first, one would say, 4 pages of the document target progress report provides, you know, a brief background into the process. It starts with, of course, the investigation conducted as part of 2006, proceeds to court actions, the visit by this committee and its members on the 19th of November, you know, where you did the fact finding on the local inspection, up to, of course, the day when split is established. And then it goes further to explain the different role players, you know, that were involved. We'll start with the Department of Human Settlements, the national one, the Provincial Department of Human Settlements, the National Housing Registration, National Housing Builders Registration Council, you know, the municipality of Joburg, and the so-called, I'll say so-called, illegal residents plus the illegal residents, you know, in the area. So those are stakeholders that form part of split, which participated, of course, in the consultative session that we've had, which sought to find an amicable solution to the challenges in the NASIA. So the document that was going to present today includes information that was shared, you know, and also developed by all the parties involved. So what one then would do is to immediately proceed and deal with the outcome of the findings, which one would find on page, it starts on page 6 of the report. You know, the first audit is the audit that was conducted by the province.
Davis, have you got that on page 6?
Page 6,
okay.
Yes, thank you.
Number 5.
Yes. And then we'll directly move to Table 1. Table 1 provides the report in terms of, you know, one, how many houses were developed, you know, throughout, of course, this period and at the time of the audit, in both the NASIA South Extension 14, rather Extension 4, and NASIA Extension 13. The fully developed houses, we had 222 in the NASIA South Extension 4, and we had 274 in the NASIA Extension 13, which brings a total to 496. We are talking about houses that are fully standing as we speak, that are being occupied, and actually it's a proper house, if we put it that way. The second set of property that we are referring to would be incomplete houses. You know, some is either incomplete houses, and there would be shares in some of them. You know, so it's not a proper structure that is a fully completed house, but they are also completed. Rather, I meant to say they are occupied, sorry. We have 130 in the NASA South Extension 4, and we have 49 in the NASA Extension 13, that is 179. The next then group of properties that are being reported on, which are audited, are the vacant stands. Of the vacant stands, of course, is where some of them where demolition took place, where some of them, shall I say, are not occupied. So the vacant stands, 242, where of course there's a need to also establish and verify ownership and who is the owner. There was 242 in the NASA South Extension 4, and there was 30 in the NASA Extension 13, bringing that to 272. Then we refer to houses that were being demolished following, of course, the court processes. 33 houses or structures were demolished in the NASA South Extension 4, and 48 in extension 13, that is 81. So the overall number of sites that were visited as part of the audit were 1,028. That is, it involves both actually sections. Then we move as part of the audit, we then looked at, that is fully standing houses, where we found that, you know, the general concern was that those houses, there were no proper plans that were provided. But then we had to visit as part of the audit and engaging the occupants. We found that some houses had what one would call at face value approved building plans. There were two in Nassau South Extension 4. There were 12 in Nassau Extension 13, that brings to 14. What one needs to say is that, as we indicated, that at face value, while of course would be convinced that those houses had proper plans and were indeed approved, that means they followed through the proper processes in line with the regulations and the building controls of the government, in this case the municipality. But we're putting an asterisk next to that because we just established that those require verification by the relevant shall building control and planning unit. Why we are saying that one of the plans was signed by a Mr. Smith. When we engaged with the municipality, there was never a Mr. Smith in the municipality. We then raised the question as to were those plans legally approved or the part or sort of the scam or syndicate. And I would just remind members that as part of the case that before a court, cost of the land, is where the challenge were in allegations are that government letterheads, if not documents, were used fraudulently. So people claimed or purported to be government officials whereas they were not. That is why now the view is that we cannot just accept those plans as approved because of the Mr. Smith who doesn't exist. So we are going to still going to verify those plans and especially when they went through the processes and they did form part of the record of the municipality. Then the next one is water meters. As part of the water meters, they worked with the municipality. We found that there were 57 water meters in the Nassau South Extension 4. Then there were 41 in the Nassau Extension 13, that is 98. The challenge here is there is a need on this one as well to verify whether those meters were installed legally or illegally. Remember, on the 19th of November, as part of the portfolio committee, you know, visit, you know, inspections, some members came forward and did allege that actually they're working with officials of the municipality, you know, and that they didn't follow processes. So there is also a possibility that some of the plans which are installed might not actually have been installed following legal processes. There could be no application, but we are busy verifying that. Then the steps for encroachment, where structures, of course, encroach over the boundaries and where they should not have been actual construction. We are still waiting for steps for Inasia South Extension 4, but we have steps for Inasia Extension, that is 13, where the number is 50. That, of course, was done with the assistance of NHBRC, you know, including the city of Joburg, their building control unit. Those that are enrolled with NHBRC, there's none in Inasia South Extension 4. There's only four in Extension 13. That is the biggest challenge when it comes to these structures, wherein, of course, there are set requirements and standards governing the construction of properties to ensure that they are also suitable for or safety for human habitation. So, last, most of them were not enrolled or are not enrolled. Then, there's also the role we are looking at of the builders who participated. How many of the builders, of which some of them were arrested and did stand trial, were arrested with the NHBRC? Builders of properties around the Inasia South Extension 4, we found that there were only two who were registered with NHBRC, and with Inasia Extension 13, that there were about 10. I think there is a mistake. The number should be 12, not 14. Apologies for that. So where there's a need to do verification of you know, specifically on approved plans and the water meters. The next table, that is table 2. Table 2 is the beneficiary verification process, where, of course, we visited all the houses, and there was a need to establish, you know, the occupants. One, identify them who they are, and establish whether they do qualify, you know, for a housing subsidy from the government. So, 756 of the 1028 were actually audited and interviewed. Why 756? The difference is 272. The 272, of course, which is the difference, would account for the second stance. So the 272, we found no one, but then it was only 756, you know, stands or households. That's where we could find occupants and then get information from them. Then of those 756, we found that 108 do qualify and actually have been considered for housing subsidies. They will be considered as part of the provision of the proposed or the planned development in and around Linasia. Then, Then the next one, we have 60, you know, residents or occupants. Those, the applications were denied or turned down because they don't fall within the threshold. So they end actually, you know, beyond that 500 as stipulated. Then we have 595, you know, households, if not families. Those did not form part of the record. They never applied, basically. And those that, of course, do qualify or fall within the threshold were advised that to apply and they'll be provided with assistance on the application for the subsidy. So those are steps with regard to, you know, the outcome of the audit. The next, on page 8, we are dealing with, you know, the issues of criminality, which were a concern, you know, around the area and are still a concern, basically. And we will deal with that more when we touch on the annexure. But all we are saying is that there was a collaboration, you know, with the Hawks to ensure that we get to the bottom of these challenges. As indicated and also reported and mentioned before the court, we had officials, unfortunately, you know, who have been convicted. We have officials who are still being identified. Because through the communication plan of the Special Inazia Intervention Team, community members are coming forward. They are still reporting. And new names are being mentioned of people who are involved. But it's not only about new names, people that have already been convicted. Some of those that are currently standing trial, people are still making further allegations against them, which then means that there's a likelihood of, you know, further, you know, cases being actually added and them actually facing more time behind bars if found guilty. So then there was that collaboration with the Hawks and also SAPS crime intelligence. Then we move to 5.1, dealing with the conclusions and the inference that could be drawn from the findings of the audit. You know, A, we start saying that the issue of fully built houses, we found that, one, they were not enrolled. Two, since they were not enrolled, in terms of the current NHBRC policy and regulations, you cannot enroll them beyond the period of 5 years because it is stipulated. Two, that in terms of structures that are completed and are suitable for habitation, we are considering as part of the regularization to enroll them late. That is mainly on the grounds that, of course, either they need minor, you know, rectification or they are suitable, don't need actually further rectification. Then there is still a concern. Concerns were raised about the further demolition of properties. After inspections were conducted by the NHPRC, there is a reality that some of the properties, unfortunately, have to be put down. Why should they be put down? That is demolished because they are not suitable. Already some, there's eminent cracks, you know, that are there. They are clearly visible. And if you let that structure to stand, you know, it's going to be a challenge. The structure that can be rectified, the structure that cannot be rectified when you feel that the wall shall collapse. We did report that as part of the audit and when we do investigations, some houses, you get a 12-room house, for example, being completed in 3 days. How is that possible? You know, where one construct in compliance, you know, with the proper building regulations, you'd find that the reinforces, you know, is not used. And if you build a house that foundation without that, it's going to disintegrate. So when it comes to those, and if the foundation is so weak, unfortunately, I think one needs to emphasize this point, you know, we argue that we cannot kind of condone that, because should people die in fierce time when there are problems, then they will come back to government. But we are, of course, actually engaging and advising the parties as part of consultation on what should be happening. But those, unfortunately, will have to be, you know, demolished. That is the finding of the audit. The next one was also on the issue of the city, you know, where there was some compliance, mostly where there are no building plans. Remember, building plans will start from the foundation up to the roofing, you know, the piping, electricity, water, and so forth. So most people actually who failed, you know, to get the plans and get the site approval, you know, there are issues with regard to that. It's about the manner it is done, but we are considering, you know, how do we then, where possible, rectify that. But the rectification of that, of course, with regard to, you know, the issue of water, the issue of electricity, we'll look at then installing prepaid meters so that we are able to account for whatever water that is being used and the user does pay. But the challenge is around that. There's also the issue of single outbuildings that we found. In some instances, what people did, they just built a single room right at the corner, you know. And for that, some of those buildings that are built at the far end of the stand, there's an element of encroachment. So again, those are being looked into to see to what extent do they encroach. Remember, there's a servitude which cannot be encroached on because either the sewer piping and other infrastructure which gets affected. Now we're looking at the intervention, that is page 9 of the report. The intervention is informed by the framework that was adopted. The framework, you know, in terms of intervention, made it clearly that as a government, we need to find solution in our intervention other than continuing with demolition. You know, those, of course, are informed by the following or looking to the following measures. Where people actually would say, how do we help them regularize? Where people would be given a chance even to purchase, you know, the stand they occupy. That is, of course, after evaluation has been done, after there's been agreement. Remember, after evaluation, each occupant needs to commit themselves to say, based on the value of this stand that I'm occupying, you know, I do commit as an individual to pay. Where a person cannot pay, one of the options is we're looking at assisting them in looking at other properties around the area where they're willing to build on their own, not rely on government subsidy, that they can afford and they can purchase. But then those that could not be occupied by them, rather be purchased by the current occupant, would also be put actually and be sold to whoever that is willing to buy and can afford. Now I will dwell more on the at the bottom on the process of regularization. We think it is key and important to emphasize this point. One, the regularization we are talking about as a government in this instance would look into the town and developmental planning. Remember, there were no plans. So we need into then the town planning aspect. So how do we then ensure that the plans, the structures, are indeed correct in terms of, you know, proper plans which are approved and been taken through the processes. The second one, we look at the valuation of stands that are being occupied. Thirdly, there's a conveyancing aspect of that in terms of transferring ownership and registration. The fourth one, there'll be rectification where necessary. And the third of the matter is that after we sat down as the three spheres of government, you know, the reality is that all these activities do have cost implications, one way or the other. So the fact is that these costs that we're relating to would either be borne by, you know, government sphere that is concerned, if not by the occupant. You know, most of costs that would be borne mostly by government is the issue of town planning, that's what we discussed, the valuation, you know, conveyancing. For the notification one, yes, members raised concerns, but that is in terms of the policy as it stands now, but this matter will be engaged further, you know, as we are still going to go back next week. We, as the broader split with the community and discuss these matters. So now, on the regularization, there was the issue of land surveying conducted. We referred earlier to encroachment. Those properties, that part which encroaches, it might not mean that the entire structure should be put down or demolished, but you might look at, can we then deal with the part of the structure that is encroaching? To say, how do you then deal with that? Only maybe demolish that part of the entire structure. We are really trying to minimize, instances where there's complete demolition of houses unless there are no other options. That is what actually we've been discussing. Then we move to paragraph 6, where we're looking at different categories. There's the issue of fully built houses that are there. We are saying that in terms of regularizing them, we start with the planning issue, town planning. Then NSPRC has given us reports. They've done level 1 and level 2 assessments. Level 2 dealt with the structure, how firm it is, you know, and so forth. So those, it won't be a challenge, you know, much to regularize them. You know, provided, of course, members would agree, because the issues of valuation of the stand, the registration, and so forth, but plans are in place to deal with the plans. The incompleted houses, there are those that I think have challenges, as indicated earlier on. There are ways of saying we deal with them, but those that are poorly constructed, I think then we have to look at, you know, how to deal with that, if not demolition. And I think point C deals with the issue of the rectification. You know, that could be required. The rectification we're talking about is rectification that seeks to ensure that the structure is safe for human habitation, not just any rectification. We are trying to help the community or occupants to comply with the relevant laws, bylaws, if not regulations. So the rectification that we're talking about at this instance is aimed at improving the quality of that house and ensure that the house does stand the test of time. Structurally unsound, on that one, there's a problem of demolition that I think we have to deal with. The issue of vacant stands, those stands would, of course, need to be looked into. As we speak, as part of the audit, we found that some of them, they have been demarcated by the people who illegally own them or occupy them, but are not there at the moment. Some of them, we found that they are registered, you know, as sites for educational institutions. Some are public open spaces which could be used for parks. There was a complaint from Linasa recently, 2013, that there's no playground, you know, for the local, you know, children or the youth, that they don't have, you know, a library. So those spaces are going to be considered actually for such activities. You know, so what we're looking at the municipality is to say those should be disposed in terms of the provincial, that is Gauteng, land disposal, you know, legislation or act. So those have to be zoned properly. Then the issue of illegally sold stands, 6.5. Those are forming part of the investigation. You know, because we are trying to establish. Remember, the stands that you are referring to, some of them, most of them are vacant, you know, the 272. So the need is to establish actually what happened, because they are fenced off. So we need to establish actually what error that took place, where the criminal activity is taking place or which took place. We are then going to deal with that, you know, in terms of the criminal investigation, which are currently underway. Then paragraph 7 deals with progress on development of planned housing project. The fact is, after...
Sorry, Bongi, can I just hold you for a second? Chairperson, I'm just wondering, we've got to be in the house by 2 o'clock. Are we haven't done new town, and this is how far we are. I think we need to be guided by you as to whether we deal with just the questions now regarding to Linasia or whether we proceed.
Yeah, I think let's finish the Linasia. But I think members did have the presentation. How far are you going?
On page 11 of 18.
No, you are about to finish.
I'm about to finish, yes.
Yeah. Just finish off and then we'll get the comments and questions. Then we, after all, we'll discuss with the committee the way forward. The department will be informed after in terms of the other presentation.
I'll touch on two issues in summary, you know. The first one is, something that after, of course, we sat down, dealt with the disputes, there has to be life in Linasia. And government has to provide certain that is required according to provide under the constitution. The issue of development, because we have been sitting down planning, looking at various typologies within the area of house that we are going to provide. So plans are afoot, particularly 427 sites for fleet. You know, we have identified each 127 sites to say we're going to provide financially linked individual, you know, subsidized houses in that area. We are also looking at, you know, some of the huge cells that were occupied or are occupied illegally to say, can't we then provide workups? So the fact is plans are in place, and we have also actually plans that have been approved by the province, you know, for those actually housing typologies, and since provider has been appointed. As a matter of fact, plans are advanced to provide, you know, two showrooms before end of this financial year. But the view is that before we get to that point, we are going to refer this to the meeting next week on the 22nd of the broader split with the community representatives to table and discuss the report before we regard this final. But it is the problem that we are coming up with to say there has been a delay, we need to move, you know, with development. The last area I want to touch on is around prosecutions and convictions. We reported that 7 people were arrested, you know. Out of the 7, 5 of them actually, you know, have been tried and convicted, you know, as we speak. And 2 of them, 1 was sentenced to 6 years. She's the wife to one of actually the parties who was arrested, and Mr. Let me not mention names rather. Yeah. You know, parties who were actually arrested. And the sentence was reduced to 3 years. But as we speak, she then received presidential pardon because she's now a state witness. She was pardoned in January because she's assisting the state in actually proving the cases against the accused, including her husband. The second person actually who was already sentenced is serving actually a 3-year prison term. Then 2 persons are going to be sentenced on the 8th, actually in December. 1 will be sentenced before the end of this month. So people actually are behind bars, people have done trial. We have people that the case, because of the number of charges, they are facing 94 charges of fraud. You know, those people, of course, the case will continue in April next year. Of these 7 people that have been arrested, 2 of them are officials, you know, from the city of Joburg. So out of the report that we are receiving, more and more people are going to get arrested, and there will be further charges added to those that are currently still in trial. Those that have been sentenced could also try to face further charges. Thank you, members and chair. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. That was a greatly improved report on the last time. At least we've got figures and we know how we're moving forward. Members, any questions, clarification? Honourable Steve?
Thanks very much, Chair. Yes, let me echo your sentiments. I think it's a much better report. Remember, last week we were just concerned in terms of time and engagement of the first process. What I just want to raise, which is of concern, is the issue of rectification. I think we should remove that word rectification then, because we might set a precedent where people might think that the government is coming to rectify. And remember, these are private houses, not government RDP houses. So we should deal away as much as possible so that we don't open ourselves for legal interpretation and legal semantics of what rectification means. So let's put another word. But in terms of the process thus far, and then there is one other one where you were saying that the houses were built on the POSS program, and those houses and the title deeds were never transferred. What is the process moving forward? But in a nutshell, we appreciate the progress thus far. And remember, we said, be cautious when you are dealing with this, because it will set a precedent everywhere and anywhere in the country. So you need to make sure that you move with speed with this one. And we will await a further report after you have had your meeting with your consultative meeting, where you will come back and say, this we've consulted, this is the report, everybody is on par, and we move forward. But it's a better report than last week. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other members?
Okay, thank you very much. I think I would agree with Honorable Karam that we need to have another wedding there, that it is needed.
because those communities are demanding. We have a lot of attempts on the Mwini vibe. Those committees are demanding that they should be reimbursed. So I think there has to be something that is inserted here that is very, very vocal in emphasizing that there won't be any reimbursement because that process they embarked on, it was illegal. That's the bottom line. So government is not going to be liable on making sure that they are reimbursed. The issue of rectification, I'm not sure how I'm going to put it, because rectification is to make sure that those houses, by them, they make sure that they are habitable. So that is why I'm saying it might be necessary that you look at that, but it is necessary that it is there. Then the other area, on page 16, there's an issue of the prevention of land invasion strategy. Seemingly, the strategy is protective space, and maybe by the time this report was drafted, the strategy was not there. But now you are saying the strategy is there. But when we are raising this matter, saying the land invasion strategy to outline the management of the invaded vacant land in the province has not yet been developed. So I don't think. I think that strategy is very critical, and it would be important that it is also submitted because we have said. In the Valley of Lanes model for the national. So I think even before you approve or the parties agree on it, we need to look at it. So that was my comment. Otherwise, you have done very well. And Nazvan and Bawe don't need to be valid. Thank you.
All right, can you just respond to those comments and those questions that have been made, the rectification, no reimbursement, and the land invasion issue? All critical.
Thank you. On rectification, I think we note suggestions and concerns raised by Member Mukhalapa. I think rectification does have legal implications, especially within the human settlement sexual sector framework. And it might create expectations, as indicated. We will look into that and maybe put just an English word without so much connotation, and which might not create expectations on the part of the occupants. Thanks for that comment. The process to dealing with the POSS, you know, we are currently engaging, but before we say we are engaging, the challenge is that some of those properties where people are not paid and there's been no transfer, there are questions around the construction, you know, the builders. You know, yes, people are given plans to go and build, some built in access. The question is, whatever that is in access, how then actually, you know, do they account for? So we are also trying to look into that, do an audit around that and investigate that. But if you're told to build 10, you want to come and claim for 12, where does actually the rest come from? They came and complained to us, but we said for now we need to wait for the court process, because some of them were arrested and they've stayed there to trial. So in terms of process, we said let us respect the court process so that there's no interference. Once it's done, then we'll be able to deal with that. But houses, of course, once information has been verified, those that are legitimately built and the occupants are the legal owners will have to be transferred in terms of the convincing processes within government. That is what's going to happen. On the investment, just briefly, there was a concern last time raised about the delay in finalizing metals within split. The issue of reimbursement members is one of the zoning issues, you know, and we are taking a resolution when we dealt with the framework to say we are not going to include the issue of reinvestment as part of the framework. that if the so-called illegal rest have a strong feeling that they should be reimbursed, they should provide a legal opinion. They're represented by legal resources. They need to say to us what law in South Africa provides for reimbursement where the actions preceding whatever loss they incurred were criminal. So we cannot lose sight, even though we are trying to assist the government positively, we can't lose sight of the fact that there was a criminal element to that, and then you cannot then demand reimbursement, you know, out of that. So we decided not to include it, and we are avoiding that. But one of the issues that has caused delays, reimbursement and the subdivision, evaluation of stands, are the issues that have caused delay. That's why we are saying that let's not include them. People think they have actually a case on that, get opinion, or then you go to court, because we don't have precedent out of that. Yes. The next one is, relook the stands of rectification. That point is noted. I will link that with suggestions made by Member Mohanapa. The land invasion strategy, I think just to touch on that, the strategy actually has not been finalized. But what we did, we have put plans in place where certain companies were appointed to say, please be on the lookout when we get cases reported to us, because the fact is, houses are still being built. There was one just built last week. And we got the company actually to go investigate. So we have private companies that are monitoring, but also we have a metro monitoring that.
You can't investigate. I finally pull my
in terms of time. Now I'm going to
investigate.
Just in closing, Chair. Yes, just in closing, Chair. We can't go around just bulldozing. When people build houses, you need to investigate whether that construction is done legally. That's what we say by investigation. Imagine if you just can't put your house down and you're illegal, you know, occupant. Another, you know, newspaper or article in the newspaper against government. We can't afford that. Then the last point I just want to, just briefly on process moving forward, lastly on this metal split. On the 22nd, we are meeting at the broad split to consider the report and finalize it. Soon after that, but we'll be given guidance by Charlie, the minister. The report will be referred to the minister, the MEC in the province, and Human Rights Commission, which are for them to look at it before then it's made public. After then, the ministers and the MEC and the Human Rights Commission, they have a public meeting. So we're still going to engage, you know, the ministry, you know, for several days. After the public meeting, then we'll start, actually, we'll launch, you know, the development project and program around the Nasia. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for that. Can I just be clear, the public meeting, are you aiming to have that before shutdown, you know, following on your meeting of the 22nd? Or are you, is that out of your hands, purely in the hands of the minister, the MEC, etc.?
In the hands of the minister, which are the ends.
This should be before the 15th of December. Because the running mark, yes, never done go with colors, it's Thursday. So well, let's say 2014. At least we could progress. We're not progress. We'll be having a problem from that community.
Yeah.
So when it's about 2014, I'm going to message. We call up with them. They mean each or in directly.
Now, Chairperson, we're in your hands for the next report. There's a Newtown report that we haven't had.
And that's that we will communicate to the president.
Thank you, everybody. I'm so sorry we've been such a mixed-up meeting today. I apologize for that.